Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, folks. We're at more Alice and Rich Bergeron. And I'm sure Psychic Tom popping in every once in a while. Or we got a lot to cover this week. No guest. Trying to get Wheelock. Changing things around on them because of Coaster Congress rescheduling, so now they've rescheduled on me. So, trying to buy a spare plane. We'll see about that. We got plenty of other stuff to talk about. That's boxing, some MMA, a little bit of rumor, and stuff. Wrestling this week. It's not the one. Here's one. Remember a couple weeks ago we were talking about this guy, Steve Costa?
Well, hold on. I'm trying to get this. I'm trying a new hands-free device. Not really working. Can you repeat that, please?
Remember when we were talking about a guy named Steve Mucosa who was taking on Jason Estrada?
Yeah.
After being off for 12 years out of the sport of boxing? Well, guess what? He won the fight.
Yeah.
No. He won the fight. And it was 76-76 on one card, a draw. The other two had a 79-74 for him, and 78-76. And basically, yeah, he shocked the audience. One judge obviously thought it was a tie, and the other two gave it to him. And he left boxing with a knee injury back in 2002. He had an 8-0 record. And now he's married. He's got two kids and a full-time job driving a bus. And he came back to the gym a few months ago and started taking it seriously again. And Estrada came in, 33 years old, with a record of 20 wins, 4 losses, and 1 tie. And was still viewed as one of the top heavyweights in New England, riding a 4-bout win streak. And it's pretty easy to assume that his people didn't see Mucosa as any major threat. And he was promoting, under his Big Six promotions, was promoting the event, so not too shabby for an old hometown guy from my neck of the woods. Wrestled on the opposing school team, but that's okay. Got a big bout here in the U.S., Sean Porter versus Kell Brook. Somebody's always got to go. It's a big boxing match this weekend.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of improvement in Sean. After we had him on our show, being on our show, helping him improve. But it was a third one Friday night, too. He didn't put me out and said he's got to stop hopping around pretty much. He takes feet, and he's tremendously better since that.
Yeah. Welcome to the show, Psychic Tom.
All right. Good evening, gentlemen. Lots to talk about.
Yes. Omar Figueroa versus Daniel Estrada, also on that quarter card. Figueroa is 23-0-1 with 17 knockouts. Estrada is 32-2-1 with 24 knockouts. And super middleweight Takeo Pika and Anthony Durrell fought to a draw in December last year. They're fighting again. Durrell's 26-0-1, 22 KOs. That was his only draw. Takeo Pika is 32-5-3 with 21 knockouts. Big one on ESPN2 tomorrow night is Rustam Nugayev versus Denis Shafakov. Russian fighting a Russian, believe it or not. Shafakov is 33-1-1 with 18 knockouts. Nugayev is 27-6-1 with 17 knockouts. And big knockout boxing. We've been talking about it. It's finally freaking here. Brian Vera versus Gabriel Rosado, Saturday on pay-per-view from Las Vegas. Vera is 23-8 with 14 knockouts. Rosado is 21-13 knockouts. This is that fighting in the pitch with shooting rounds. Weird type of sport that, for some reason, the Nevada governor has sanctioned. I lied about there being no wrestling. According to this article, there's been a lawsuit against WWE alleging false and misleading statements. The Shareholders Foundation announces that an investor who purchased shares from WWE filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the District of Connecticut over alleged violations of federal securities laws. Connection with certain allegedly false and misleading statements made between October 31st, 2013 and May 16th, 2014. And basically, they were putting out some supposedly misleading statements regarding WWE's ability to command a premium fee in upcoming negotiations to renew its television licensing. So, pretty ridiculous little thing to get snagged up on, but when you're a public business, you know, everything's got to be to the board. Watch out for that shit. Mike King, an MMA story, came down the pipe. Another veteran of the same season to be popped for steroids. He tested positive for nandrolone, which is an anabolic steroid. And this was following his exciting bout against Cahal Pickard in UFC Fight Night Dublin. He almost won that fight. So pretty crazy. But,
yeah, you really have to wonder what he was thinking. I mean, knowing what the testing is like now. I first heard that, and I'm just scratching my head saying, you know, what's going through your head?
Yeah, not smart. But King, there's no regulatory agency over there in Ireland, so King got busted by the UFC itself. He got a 9-month suspension and the stipulation that he must pass a drug test before he receives any clearance to fight again. And I did notice he was really huffing and puffing at the end of that fight. Anyway, violates UFC's policy. And he's agreed to serve that 9-month suspension, retroactive to the event, and must pass that drug test. He also has to give up $50,000 for his fight in the night box.
Ouch.
That's lost for a guy at that level. Now, we pretty much talked about domestic violence a little bit last week with the Josh Crispy story. Now we got another one, another fighter. This guy's appropriately named, but still, War Machine, otherwise known as Bong Copenhaver, beat the crap out of his girlfriend, his ex, Christy Mack. This one, I mean, this could be a porno movie. Oh, wait, she's a porn star. It's crazy. Because, basically, there's two different stories. She's saying he came in the house unannounced. He said he was trying to surprise her because he was going to propose to her. So she said he comes in the house unannounced and starts beating up her completely small friend who's there. Now his story is she was getting it on with this guy, and he walked in on him in the middle of it. So beat the crap out of woman. But we haven't heard anything from the guy, or I haven't. The guy that got beat up, and she put some pictures up on Facebook because she got the crap kicked out of her. Face is all swollen and everything like that. And if that's not enough, guess who else is involved?
Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Yes, sir. Dog. And, pretty crazy, and a lot of people are kind of going after Dog, acting like he's challenging War Machine to an MMA fight or something, you know, and like they're saying, oh, Dog, you would lose, but I mean, if anybody's ever seen the show, he doesn't get into MMA fights with his fugitive. He just puts a can of bear mace right in front of their face, and they tend to do what he tells them. So this is a perfect guy for him to be after. Actually, John Howard, former guest of ours, is pretty pissed about the whole thing for some reason. Said some very harsh words for War Machine. He says, this is for that pussy-ass machine. Yo, you're a straight bitch. I have three daughters, a mother, a sister, and an aunt who went through that shit. You're a straight pussy, straight pussy. A skilled fighter beating up a little girl like that. You're a pussy-ass motherfucker. Howard doesn't mince any words there. And War Machine is now being hunted by the Dog. So, bad day. Oh, no, for him. He's still on loose. Residence is out there somewhere in Vegas, but his claim is he was fighting for his life. Wanted to propose to his girlfriend, who's a well-known porn star, Christy Mack, and he was unceremoniously released from Bellator on Friday after it came to light that he's now the prime suspect in this beating.
Well, that was a shocking, controversial move, huh? You know, ironically, Jenna Jameson was making some comments on this on CNN on her headline. It's one of those shows where they have about six talking heads on there in the evening, and
right.
They were all taking the opportunity to talk about what a vile, immoral activity mixed martial arts is, and this is the end result of this. I mean, they did have someone on. I came in at the tail end of it, and they had someone on actually defending the sport. I mean, how can you condemn thousands of athletes for the, you know, for a few bad apples? You'll find them in any occupation. But that's been interesting. I mean, all through the media, the print media, there's a lot of animosity toward MMA, an awful lot.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, does that type of behavior create problems? And actually, right along these same lines, I have another story that involves a guy being charged with murder in court. I guess it's Connecticut or Rhode Island. But guy stabbed to death a coworker at a nursery in Newport, and he did so because he was having paranoid delusions that the other man was trying to kill him. Delusions stemmed from a major mental illness, which doctors believe was caused by his career as a boxer. This guy's 57 years old. He was deemed mentally ill last week and dangerous, and also was committed to a state hospital. Stabbed a 44-year-old guy at work in February, and they charged him with second-degree intentional murder. And he basically was under the paranoid, delusional belief that his coworker was poisoning his food and water. So he brought a knife to his place of employment and attacked and killed the coworker. So basically, they say he suffers from a psychotic disorder and organic brain impairment. And he says that one doctor reported that his symptoms are very similar to individuals who have been diagnosed with dementia pugilistica, which is a syndrome that has been identified in a significant percentage of individuals who experience repeated head trauma, such as professional boxers, football players, and others who may have experienced multiple concussions or head trauma over the course of their careers.
Nobody ever talks about soccer having any head trauma.
Right? So it's being blamed. I mean, there was another article that I read, too, that basically correlated the fact that, you know, these guys are fighters with these situations where they've beaten their girlfriends and their wives. And, of course, you had to make, somebody had to make the analysis of, you know, when are we going to have a Chris Benoit in MMA where he kills his whole family, you know, somebody in MMA kills their whole family. And, you know, it's sad to say it's possible, but the farthest I think we've come, or the closest we've come to that, I don't know. It's probably, well, there was one case of, it wasn't that serious, but there was one case where a Strikeforce fighter, big guy, beat up his wife, and then they brought him back after the fact. I forget who that was, big black guy. But anyway, you know, they are making the connection. There have been a couple MMA fighters wrapped up in murders, but you know, nothing associated with a long career of taking head trauma. Just random, you know, wing nuts were crazy. There was the one guy who actually freaking cut the guy's chest open and ate his beating heart. Well, that was a weird story. That was mentioned in one of the case studies they were talking about. As if, you know, the guy's fighting career had anything to do with that. It was that drug. But anyway, they are trying to make that corollary of, you know, just because you participate in violent actions in a cage or a ring, you know, you're a savage outside of it. And I don't agree at all. I only get violent when I get blackout drunk. No. But it is being put out there as a theory, and people are talking about it because of this thing. The thing with Grisby was definitely not as high profile for some reason, and he actually trained his dog to go after his wife. So that was some pretty unbelievable stuff. And was arrested twice in 2 days. And they can't even catch this dude. But yeah, T. Ortiz beat up Jenna Jameson. Never really got in trouble for it, but you know what happened. You can point to a lot of fighters who beat up their girlfriends. You can point to a lot of football players who have done the same thing. So, yeah. So War Machine's going to have to sit out the first two games of the NFL season, I guess.
You know, I just can't understand why these guys can't accept the fact if it's over, it's over. Period. Jeez.
Yeah, who proposes to their ex? I think it's an ex for a reason there, buddy. Who proposes to a porn star? Oh, wait, Tito Ortiz. Sorry. Anyway. Injuries get in the way of this Lewiston main show for New England fighting. Tim Sylvia turns out, no, he's not going to fight Christian Moorcraft. Not going to be the main event. He's going to do some meet and greets. Moorcraft has a back issue. Silva has a knee injury. So both of these guys hurt themselves before this fight. So the card's original co-feature, which marks the return of Buck Sports' Ray All Business Wood from a long, year-long hiatus due to a torn ACL. He's going to defend his main state featherweight title against Brazilian Gabriel Beto. So that's been elevated to main event status. In one of three championship bouts, Paul Gorman will defend his state bantamweight crown against Tim Goodwin. Bruce Boynton and Jesse Erickson will battle for the vacant lightweight title. Silva, of course, was bitching and moaning about Dana White not putting him on the card here in Maine. Now he can't fight anyone. He's 31-10 overall in his MMA career, but 0-4 with one no contest in his last victory, which was his last fight for New England Fights on June 16, 2012. That was a 12-second knockout, so he didn't have to work that hard that night. He says, this is only the second time I've had to pull out of a fight from an injury. I really wanted to fight in front of my home crowd. I'm not getting any younger, and the chances of me fighting again in Maine are pretty slim. He says, I think my body is trying to tell me something. Maybe it's time to call it quits. I don't know. We'll see how fast I can get back in the gym and see how the knee holds up. So, we will see. Big injury news as well. John Jones and Daniel Cormier will not be fighting at the time they originally were supposed to fight. Now they're going to fight January 3rd next year. Jones suffered a torn meniscus and sprained ankle during training on Monday. And Cormier is pretty pissed. He said he's training pretty hard. He was going to go in on a bum knee, and I'm not sure if he's going to go ahead and do the surgery now, but that I just wish he would have fought through it like I was going to do. So the deck's been shuffled as a result. Flyweight title fight between Demetrius Johnson and Chris Carriasso that was originally planned for UFC 177 is being moved to the main event of 178.
You know, this is a trend that's just getting worse. That it just seems like all these training injuries, I don't know what the answer is to it. But it just seems like I don't remember this even... You know, 5-10 years ago, it was nowhere near like this. So I don't know if everyone's just training so much harder or just what the problem is, but it's becoming a gigantic problem. And just put yourself in Gus's shoes, because really it was his fight in the first place. Now they're telling him, well, too bad, you're just going to have to wait. And he says that's what he's going to do, but that's going to leave him probably more than a year without a fight. So... up all the way around.
It's too bad. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, I think the fact that these guys have the health insurance program is a big part of why you're seeing this big jump. Because people know they can get it taken care of now. Whereas in the past, they just fight through it. They wouldn't talk about it. You know, maybe they take care of it if they got enough money from the fight. So now they know that they're going to get hooked up with all the medical treatment they need, they can, put it off when they have to put it off and not go into a fight all week. Get your ankle or whatever. So, in a good way, you know, it's helped a lot of guys, but in a bad way, it's calls on fight cards a little bit tougher to deal with, but, you know, guys have to go out. What do you get to? And last weekend, first weekend of August, there was no event. You know, people get injured, so no event got canceled. Ever been in any road rage incidents, guys?
Yeah. I had one guy a couple years ago. We were both at a four-way stop sign. I thought he just blew through, and I gave a look, what the fuck? And he said, flip out. He jumped out of his car. I got, I'm like, you got something to say? And he's like, and he did something. I said, whoa. And I said something back. And I don't know if he was just trying to be a badass. I think I'd be intimidated. And when I wasn't, like, he was getting back in his car. And I never had one where I had to blast anybody. I came close two times. That was one of them. But if I blasted anybody, you know, that I've, you know, definitely see the fear of God in a few people.
How about you, Tom?
I thank God I'm an old man, you know, and I drive very zen-like now, but in my younger days, yeah, there were a few. But I hate to even start describing them. Some of them would take a little while longer, but I probably my worst was I was cut off once, and I had a sword cane in the back seat of my 64 Chevy, and the guy that did this, and he also had a whole carload full of people. This is really stupid. But I'm going down the freeway trying to give him a flat tire with this sword cane. And I looked at that time. I had my beard, long hair, looking like a maniac. And this guy's just, I mean, nowadays I'd have been in jail real quick with the cell phones and stuff. But I was unsuccessful in the mission. He was able to speed away. But, yeah, I'm sure there's been a few other ones, too, but I don't, you know, I just try to keep them buried, you know, and it's like, wow, what was I thinking?
I had a funny one time. You guys are like this. I at my one job, I used to drop the mail off at the post office on the way home, which is right next to our building. So for a job that took 5 minutes, they'd let me get 30 minutes early, so, and I wouldn't share that with anybody. And one day, we had just got our reviews. My review was through the roof. We just got our bonuses. My bonus barely got off the ground. So, of course, I'm furious. You know, I had put up a whole PowerPoint presentation on why I thought I deserved the raise, and they kind of just said, we appreciate everything you do, but no, we can't do it. And I was pissed. So now I'm dropping the mail off, and I go, I there was two spots right at where the ramp was, where they were collected. So I get out, I'm in the further spot. And I pull in, get out, throw my mail up on the ground, I get back in my car, I'm pulling out. And the guy pulls in and the guy behind me flips into me. And he starts saying something like, that's your fault. I said, you're the one that hit me, yeah. And he jumped in and said, I need your insurance. I said, there's no damage to either car. There's none. I don't care. It's a company car. I need your insurance. I said, what you need to do is get the fuck back in your car, sit down, and shut up. You know, shut you up. You're right, there was no damage. I agree with you.
I had one once where just happened to be the end of the school day. I was actually delivering an afternoon daily newspaper. I used to work for the circulation department. So I had us delivering like 300 papers a day on a bad day. And to start off, I was sick. I wasn't feeling good. I had some kind of flu or cold. The last thing I want to do is get in a fight. So I'm throwing papers out the window, trying not to get out of the car too much, trying to get everything done quick. And I stop at this one house, and there's a sign right in front of the driveway for this house, mine driveway. I'm pulling out. I'm going slow. I don't want to hit anybody. Pull out slow and, you know, start going down the road to the next house that I got delivered to. All of a sudden, I hear this guy laying on his horn, like purposely trying to scare the shit out of me. It made me swerve. So normally I wouldn't do this. I'm in a company car, and I put the middle finger out the window. Oh, boy. Next thing you know, a school bus is coming the other way, dropping kids off. School bus sign pops out, stop. This guy gets out of his truck and starts screaming at me, leans in the window, and then spits right in my face.
Whoa!
Oh, I was about to apologize to this guy and just go on my way, but then he spit in my face. So I popped the door open. I got up. He threw one punch, got me in the lip, and then I just started unloading. Grabbed the shirt, started throwing right hand. Got his head open before I even got him to the ground. And I dragged him back up, back across the back hood, picked him up by the legs, brought him to the ground, and I asked him if he had a knife. And he shook his head with the blood pouring down, and he goes, no. could have hit him again right there, but I had some restraint. I got up off of him. I looked over my shoulder, and there's some guy who stopped in his car behind the truck. All the kids are in there just getting off the bus, and they're looking at this shit going down. They can't believe their eyes. So he ended up getting up, and I'm looking up when he's getting up, and there's his daughter crying her eyes out in the car. Passenger seat of the truck, so I kind of felt bad about that. But anyway, the whole reason I bring up road rage is Donald Cowboy Cerrone just had his day in court where he was acquitted of boat rage. Not road rage, but boat rage. And I know he likes his boat. He just actually used his bonus money from his last week to get a nice new wakeboarding boat. But these charges first came to light back in August 2013 after he was involved in an accident while boating on Lake Granby in Colorado. And he was suspected of assaulting Jeffrey S. Haley in a bout of boat rage. He was charged with third degree assault at the time. But he got his day in court and they threw it out, not guilty on all charges. So congratulations.
I guess the cowboy must have made him an offer he couldn't refuse, huh? The guy who was... You know, that would be interesting, though, if you're a fight fan and you're having an incident with a famous fighter, and obviously a lot of people don't know who some of these people are. They probably wouldn't be doing that. Like the Tank Abbott scene there in the drive-thru, I'm sure we've discussed that one. But, you know, you got to wonder... If these people were fight fans, you know, you think, oh, okay, maybe this is not a good idea.
Maybe not. You know, we talked a little bit about these reports trying to tie being a mixed martial artist to being a wife beater. Well, I don't know about what fighting does to your brain specifically. I mean, I know a little bit about it, but I don't know everything. But apparently, promoting boxing has made this one guy a little bit twisted. Literally twisted. He's going to be undergoing gender reassignment. This news has been all over the boxing results for Google. I mean, for some reason, it's big news. Frank Maloney wants to be called Kelly Maloney now. This British boxing promoter. Former boxing promoter, I guess he's not doing it anymore. Too busy dealing with being in the wrong body, I guess. He says, I have always known I was a woman working with the transgender group TG Pals. Managing director Heather Ashton told the BBC that Kelly has been incredibly brave and courageous. And Frank Maloney is probably most famous for guiding Lennox Lewis to the world heavyweight title in 1993. He says, or she says, I can't keep living in the shadows. That is why I am doing what I am doing today. Living with the burden any longer would have killed me. What was wrong at birth is now being medically corrected. I have a female brain. I knew I was different from the minute I could compare myself to other children. Lennox Lewis said he was initially shocked at the news, but respected his former promoter's decision. Said this world we live in isn't always cut and dried or black and white, and coming from the boxing fraternity, I can only imagine what a difficult decision this must be for Kelly. Weird. Weird story.
Definitely would have been fun.
Well, after months of negotiations with multiple opponents, IBF middleweight champion Sam Solomon is set to make the first defense of his world championship abroad, having come to an agreement to face former undisputed middleweight champion Jermaine Taylor.
Taylor. Boy, there's a name we haven't heard of in a while.
Right. Since last week, right?
Right.
Did we bring that up? probably a sore subject for our guest last week. Anyway, Solomon will make a surprise voluntary defense against Taylor in the U.S. Despite not having an official date or location, it appears likely that they will face each other in the later stages of 2014 with a possible date touted for early December in Las Vegas. So, Taylor, 35, hasn't campaigned at middleweight since leaving the division in 2008, shortly after being knocked out by Kelly Pavlik in Atlantic City. And despite all that, he still holds an IBF number 15 rating in middleweight. Maybe there's something wrong with the ratings. But Taylor's advisor is also Al Haymon, so that should tell you something. Solomon's 40 years old, and his team is led by manager David Stanley, and they've been in lengthy discussions with several notable fighters in the middleweight division. We'll start on the title defense of Monte Carlo against Martin Murray, although the figure offered was substantially lower than what was reported. Considering the fight against Taylor is relatively low risk for a high six-figure purse, Solomon, who's 44-11 with 18 KOs, can then go into possible unification fights with a victory. And think about going up against Miguel Cotto or Gennady Golovkin. People with some heavier pockets. Well, Uriah Faber and Alex Caceres are back in the news, not because they're fighting again, but because they're taking each other's place. Uriah Faber is withdrawn for an injury from his UFC Fight Night 52 bout, and as a result, Alex Caceres, who just had a five-fight win streak snapped by Faber, is his replacement. Caceres is 10-6. With one no contest. And known as Bruce Leroy. Biggest win was when earlier this year he took out Sergio Pettis, former guest of ours on the show way back when. And the brother of Anthony Pettis, UFC lightweight champion. So they're going to face a pretty big veteran. A guy named Masanori Kanahara, 23-11-5 in MMA, making his UFC debut. So, good luck for Cigarette. Okay. UFC welterweight Josh Koscheck will be the latest fighter to serve as UFC on Fox analyst. It was announced Thursday that the veteran of 22 bouts in the octagon will make his debut, breaking down the action for UFC Fight Night 47, which takes place this weekend, August 16th. It airs exclusively on Fox Sports 1. And it's the promotion's first ever event to take place in Bangor, Maine. Karen Bryant, Dominic Cruz, and Brian Stann will also host the pre-fight, weigh-ins, and post-fight broadcast. And Koscheck last fought at UFC 167, where he was knocked out by Tyron Woodley. That was the third straight for Koscheck. Now, here's a vicious story. Very interesting, vicious story. Dan Goosen has been basically caught off guard by big-time lawsuit filed by former, or long-time actual current client, Andre Ward. Very weird story here. Filed in federal court in California. Ward alleges Goosen violated the Muhammad Ali Boxing Reform Act, which requires all promoters to disclose the amount they pocketed from the boxing match to their clients. And according to the documents, he says, Ward, he says, even though Goosen has promoted Ward for nearly his entire 10-year professional career, and despite repeated requests by Ward, Goosen failed in all his business to make any timely disclosures to Ward for any of his fights from 2004 to 2012. And the suit went on to say that when Goosen was setting up a fight in 2013 for Ward, Gusen's financial disclosure was, quote, woefully inadequate, unquote. And this is just the latest battle between Ward and Gusen. Ward's an Olympic gold medalist. He was previously denied twice by the California State Athletic Commission when he tried to have his contract with Gusen invalidated. Andre Ward also sued the California Superior Court. The difference between this lawsuit and the previous ones is the boxer is asking for damages that could net him tens of millions of dollars. We'll probably put Gusen out of business, too. But, you know, nobody wants to fight Andre Ward, so I guess he's got to make his money some other way.
How long has it been since Ward's had his last fight? I can't remember.
Edwin Rodriguez.
Okay, yeah, one
fight
after the
Chad
Dawson fight.
Not
about that.
That was, fall? Mm.
I did, at least. I mean, the fight with Chad Dawson was September 12th. This one, yeah, probably last year sometime, maybe November-ish.
Well, that's all the news I have. But let's check out, we got UFC Fight Night, Bader versus St. Croix. As I said, Josh Koscheck's going to be doing some analysis for that. That's coming up on August 16th. We can go over that card there. Let's see, we've got on Box Rec. I know we got some good fights this weekend. Scheduled. And you guys got any news I haven't heard?
Yeah, I want to talk about the today, Saturday night, which is a long story, which had me a little bit of public transportation rage. yeah, this is a long one. I'm in a battle with them right now. But what had happened, I watched the next day, I'm talking to my dad, and he goes, it was more of a mismatch than was even advertised to be. And this is, now, I know we've interviewed Danny. I've met Danny. I like Danny Garcia a lot. He's a good fighter. He's a good role model. I think you can do a lot of great things for the sport, you know. Fight the fighter now. Okay, yeah, but tough fight with Mauricio Herrera. A lot of people lost that fight. Now, you know, they wanted to fight to build him back up to make him a, you know, worthy candidate in the future Mayweather sweepstakes. So we go in there and he's fighting a fighter that was by the name of Rob Salka, who was a lightweight, 19-3, only 3 knockouts, not highly regarded. It was so bad that two sanctioning bodies refused sanctions. So basically, the sanctioning bodies were giving up a chunk of change because they get 3% of, you know, when the fight was first, a sanctioning fee. So you figure that's a nice chunk of change. The guy's getting 100 or he's getting 1 million, you get 3% of that. You know, it's a little chunk of the pocket. They can thank anybody, said, no thanks. Salka destroyed the fight by losing. You know, first round was relatively uneventful. Second round, Garcia bombs him. Right hand boom, buckles him, down he goes. He gets up, he goes bombing him away again. Down he goes. He's hit him a few other times. The guy's buckling, the guy's hurt. And you can see the corner trying to throw the towel in. Too late. So he hits his right hand to the body and a massive left hook, and this guy dropped. And it was scary, you know, because, I mean, he went down like a ton. And see, the folks like that are how guys got hurt, or guys get hurt. It was an obvious mismatch. And I'm kind of grateful that Salsa didn't have an iron can chin, like a good Ramada cannon, or anything, a Marvin Hagler chin, because then he would have taken a tremendous punishment over the duration of the fight and that's how fatalities happen. Thankfully, with engine two rounds. Because what it reminded me of was the Gabriel Ruelas Jimmy Garcia fight. When Garcia was named the number one contender, despite losing the last fight before that in like a shutout fashion. So he's the number one contender, and basically from the moment the first bell rang, so finally the referee stopped with the guy who's taking a tremendous beating for 11 rounds because his chin was too good. And then they stop it. Garcia goes into a and dies. You know, but thankfully, in this situation, Rob Falco's chin saved him by taking him out of the fight.
Well, we got UFC Fight Night from Bangor, Maine. Wonder if Stephen King's going to be there. Ryan Bader, main event versus Ovin St. Pro. Bader is 17-4. St. Pro is 16-5. Neither one of these guys are really in a title picture, so it's kind of odd to see these guys in a main event, but, you know, it's freaking Maine.
Yeah, and I think this is a real crossroads for Bader. I think this is do or die for him, really. So we'll see how he handles the pressure of that, because OSP is just coming up, and I don't think he has the same kind of pressure on him. If he loses, it's not the end of the world for him. But I think with Bader, he's been around long enough and come so close at times that he's got to put it together.
Did you just call him OSP?
OSP, right?
Never heard that nickname.
Yeah, OSP. Well, I don't know. That's his initials. One of those French Haitian last names. So OSP.
On the call,
And from what I've heard, what I've heard, he's a freakishly talented athlete. But I think Bader, I'm leaning toward Bader slightly. But hey, this one's going to be close.
Yeah, stylistically, I think they match up well. You only got one difference in win-loss records. Literally one fight difference. You know, Kovac, Shane Crow, won one more fight. Austin, their records would be exact. Right, we got Ross Pearson and Green Maynard in the co-main event. Pearson is 15-7, Maynard is 11-3-1. Both of those guys want to show their Robin.
You know, if I've ever heard of a clash of styles, I think this would have to be it, because I think that Maynard, if you look back on his career, he started off just steamrolling everyone with that outstanding wrestling, and then he wanted to keep the fight standing. And I don't think it's worked out quite that well for him. I mean, he's got a good punch, no knock on his boxing skills, but I think he would be well served to get this fight down. And I think that might be Pearson's Achilles heel, but the problem he's going to have there is Pearson is so quick and so powerful that... Wow, another very close one. And this is another one, I think, that if Maynard loses, there may not be a tomorrow for him. So I think, again, he's got to be feeling the pressure of this. And then Pearson, of course, is desperate to come back for a win. As he said, he wants to get that bad taste out of his mouth of that Sanchez robbery that happened a few months ago.
Yeah.
So...
Maybe he'll still get a bonus, like he won.
Yeah. So I do think that if Maynard can keep this fight on the ground, he'll have the edge and he can pull it off. But I think if he's going to stand there and trade, he's really taking a big chance.
Yeah, I think Pearson kind of dropped off the radar for a while, but he's fighting with some new commitment now. So I'm excited about this one. We We have a fellow Mainer. Well, not fellow, because I'm not a Mainer, but one of the only big Mainers on the card, Tim Boach, 17-7, fighting Brad Tavares, who's 12-2. That'll be an interesting fight. We got Seth Bezinski, 19-11, fighting Alan Gilbayan, who's 9-2. Sean Jordan, 15-6, fighting Jack May, who's 7-1. We got Thiago Tavares, 18-5-1, fighting Robbie Peralta, who's 18-4. Good matchmaking there. Jussie Da Silva, 16-3, fighting Zach Makovsky, who's 18-4. Yeah, female fight on this one, Sarah McMahon, 7-1. Fighting Lauren Murphy, who's 8-0. We got Sam Alves, smiling Sam Alves back.
One of our former guests. Yes, one of our former guests.
Back in the UFC after his stint on the Ultimate Fighter didn't go as planned. He is 23-5, fighting Tom Watson, who's 16-7. And in the first fight of the night, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the night that we had Sam on, we had his opponent on as well, if you recall
right.
that. That was a first. I don't recall us ever doing that before or since. And it sounds like Sam must have got the W that night.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Doing all right. So anyway, in the first fight of the night, we have Nolan Tickman, 4-1, versus Frankie Sands, who's 8-2. And that's pretty much the big deal going on in boxing this weekend. Another former guest of ours is fighting this weekend, a girl named Kalisha West, Wild Wild West. We interviewed her way back in the day. She's 16-1-3, and she's fighting Olivia Garula, who's 14-14 with two draws, down in, up in Quebec, Canada. She's the main event tomorrow night. Over in Ecuador tomorrow night, we have Fernando Angulo fighting Daniel Angel Lopez. Fernando is 27-9 with 16 knockouts. Lopez is 26-4-1 with 21 knockouts. Nothing else really too crazy on the card there. As I mentioned, Friday Night Fight, the main event is Rustam Nagaev versus Denis Shafikov. We also have Jose Pedraza, 17-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting Juan Carlos Ortiz. 20 wins, 14 losses, and one draw. Welterweight, 8-rounder, Francisco Santana. 20 wins, 3 losses, 1 draw, 9 knockouts, and Wilfredo Acuna. 15-15, 12 knockouts. Pretty interesting card in Colombia. Got a bunch of 10-round fights worth mentioning here. Top one on the list is lightweight Dunis Lenin, who's 22-24 with two draws and 16 knockouts, fighting Walter Estrada, who's 45-16-1 with 29 knockouts. That's the main event. Then we have Raul Corrales, who's 22-2-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Luis Melendez at super bantamweight. Melendez is 38-9-1 with 28 knockouts. We got a couple 10-round welterweight fights. Ronald Montes, undefeated, 16-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Francisco Cordero, 29-3 with 21 knockouts. And Samuel Vargas, 18-1-1 with 8 knockouts, fighting Jailer Barrio, who's 19-8. over in Frankfurt, Germany. No, Erfurt, Germany. On Saturday, we have a cruiserweights title on the line. IBF cruiserweight title. Johan Pablo Hernandez, 28-1, with 14 knockouts, will be fighting Ferhat Arslan. 34-7-2 with 21 knockouts. Also on the line, same night, same card, Jack Colquay, 17-1 with 10 knockouts, will be fighting Isaac Real, 10-0-1 with 5 knockouts for the WBA Intercontinental Light Middleweight title and the EBU Light Middleweight title. And also super middleweight Tyrone Zouche, 14-0 with 8 knockouts, taking on Baker Barakat, 40-16-4, 27 knockouts. Next is a vacant IBF International. These guys have some decent records. Ismael Abdul, the cruiserweight, an 8-rounder against Noel Igor is 12-0 with 7 knockouts. Ismael is 54-29-2 with 20 knockouts. Crazy record. And let's go to page 2, see if we got it. Fights. WBC Continental America's Super Bantamweight title is on the line in Mexico. Horacio Garcia, 26-0 with 18 knockouts, fighting Jonathan Perez, 33-9 with 27 knockouts. We got Ivan Morales, 25-0 with knockouts, fighting Cesar Pianchola, 33-4 with 20 knockouts. And WBC Female Bantamweight titles between Jessica Gonzalez, 5-1, and Estrella Valverde, who's 10-4-1. Hey, our former guest, one of our, the most popular guests we've ever had is in action in Charlotte, North Carolina on Saturday. He's the main event. Hector Camacho Jr., 57-6-1, 31 knockouts, fighting Miguel Angel Munguia. He's 29-31, one draw. And the only other decent card on the fight that's got an actual opponent is Ray Edwards, who's 7-0. Fighting Juan Huey, who is on his pro debut. Good luck. And as we mentioned, Kel Brook fighting Sean Porter. Also on Saturday, that's Sakio Bika versus Durrell and Omar Figueroa versus Estrada. Don't forget, Deontay Wilder also on this card, 31-0 with 31 knockouts. He's fighting Jason Gabbert. 25-16 with 4 draws, 11 knockouts. Dominic Brazil is on this card, 8-round heavyweight fight. Probably got a first shot at Wilder. He's 11-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Billy Zumbrun, 27-0 with 16 knockouts. Oh no, there's some warriors on this card, big time veterans. Way down on the list is lightweights. Jorge Linares, who's 36-3 with 23 knockouts, fighting Ira Terry, who's 26-11 with 16 knockouts. There's only really 4 undercard fights with people that have 10 fights or less, mostly. That's a heck of a card. Got over in San Diego on Saturday, pretty interesting super bantamweight matchup, 8 rounds between Christopher Martin, 27-3-3 with 9 knockouts, and Giovanni Caro, who's 24-14-4 with 19 knockouts. And we have the vacant NABF light welterweight title on the line in an 8-round fight between Giovanni standalone is 13-0, 7 on roads. And Osinohan Vasquez is 7-1-1 with three wins. Then we go into Tuesday and beyond. There's a couple of opponents facing each other for titles here. On Tuesday, from Slovakia, the vacant Slovakian welterweight title and the vacant Global Boxing Federation welterweight title are on the line. Between these two guys, light welterweights, Ivan Gador, he's 15-40, 15 wins, 40 losses, 4 draws, fighting Lubos Preradnik, who's 9-52. 52 losses. Granted, 6 of those 9 wins are by knockout, but hey, these guys are fighting for a title.
Well, that'll be something to tell their grandkids. They can take one of them's going to be able to take that belt home and get it enshrined. Oh wow, ain't that something? 9-52, huh?
9-52.
Lots of them in a draw.
Yeah.
Oh, now that's cold. That's cold. Come on. No, that couldn't happen.
The worst thing I've ever seen, when I was boxing in college, I did 4 years at Lock Haven University, and on our division, the Northeast division, especially at the time, when Army wasn't in that division, I think my freshman year, I think they joined my sophomore year. So in the Northeast division, we had Lock Haven, New Hampshire, Penn State, Shippensburg, Westfield University, Pittsburgh wasn't in yet. I'm drawing blanks on right now. So, we would come up with the regionals every year. Most schools didn't have guys at the lighter weight classes, 112 or 119. And I remember my freshman year, we went up to New York, to the University of New York, Westchester. And they were kind of like exhibitions. And Westfield University brought down a kid that was around 112 pounds and around a kid 119. We were about exhibitions. The only guys they really had to put him in there with were the 125-pounder, which could mean, and Josh was pretty good. So Josh takes the 112-pounder, wipes the floor with him, takes the 112-pounder, wipes the floor with him. So basically, if you counted them, these guys are now 0-1, technically. So then we get to the regionals. Nobody in the regional has anybody at 112 or 119 except for Westfield. They bring down these two kids. The kids step on the scale and both become regional champions. They've got a gold medal and an All-American status. Regional champions are basically being 0-1. So now they get out to nationals. And I forget, four divisions, Northeast, Southeast, Midwest, and West. So West had two kids from Air Force. And Air Force basically had a full lineup, 112 to heavyweight. Navy in the Southeast had basically the same thing, 112 to heavyweight. So in the Midwest had like Kentucky and some of those schools. They didn't have nobody to put in those weight classes. So when you get to the Nationals, you got three guys there at 112 and three guys at 119. Don't both the kids from Westfield draw the bye? So now they're fighting for the national title. They're both facing 0-1, and they both get one shot in a round. They're still not going to run them up.
Pretty wild. Anyway, we have run out of time. We got 45 minutes left. We're running out of content. We've got the boxing schedule done. There's really not much going on other than UFC for the remainder of this weekend. And that's about it. That's all the news I got. And I'm sure we'll have Mark Davey and or Sean Wheelock on next week. So mark your calendars for that one. We'll be putting previews out and tweets and all that stuff. Check out the blog, VikingsUnlimited.com, and our Facebook page, of course. You can go to Facebook.com/UnlimitedFightNews or Fight News Unlimited. Either way, you'll get to one of our pages, either my personal page or the fan page. So check that out. And until next week, we'll see you.
All right, guys. Let's enjoy the weekend. Lots of fights.
And